Racing HQ is brought to you by TAB. Get a bonus bet up to $50 for second and third on selected races this weekend. Gamble responsibly.
This morning, chin wagging with Kim Waugh, who's been very busy of late, training and getting winners too. Morning, Kim.
Good morning, Cozzy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, I want to ask first up, do you still have blue ribbons and trophies from that Bankstown Pony Club?
No, I don't. They're long gone.
They weren't kept as mementos?
No. We moved on as we grew up and moved on to bigger and better things.
Now, were your family, how did you get involved with horses? Because I know for a fact you had a lot of fun there in your teenage years at the Pony Club, the local shows, the whole lot, which a lot of young girls and young boys do. What was your family background?
Not my mother and father directly. My uncle, he had horses and paces, and then I had another family friend who had the racehorses. So I sort of was involved in all sides of it from a very young age.
Was your uncle Charlie Parsons?
No. Charlie was just a very close friend, and I also worked for him for quite a while and drove a lot of winners for him as well.
Now, I heard you describe him once as one of the kindest men with a horse and almost like a horse whisperer.
Definitely. No, he was. He taught me a lot, and he was very gentle, a brilliant horseman, and I watched him break a lot of horses in and deal with a lot of... he used to get a lot of horses that were sort of like rogues and, people had a lot of trouble with, and they'd send them to Charlie, some thoroughbreds and standardbreds and even just ponies in general. And to watch him turn them around was quite amazing. And he did it very gently and always got a great result. So, no, he was one of a kind for sure.
Kim, when you see people break horses in these days, they're pretty well handled. They come from the yearling sales. But those who haven't been, you see a lot of different styles over the years. Did he do anything different?
Oh, look, he didn't do anything, that different. But it was his approach. And the way he did it, and it was quite amazing the way the horses responded to him. Watching him do that was really inspiring and interesting to watch. That horses, they can read people, and they can read people that are very gentle and kind, I believe.
Mm. Now, with Charlie, from what I gather, you had a crack at everything, shoeing the whole lot.
Charlie did. Or me?
No, you.
I think he did too.
Yeah, I reckon. But from what I gather, you had a crack at everything.
Yeah, I did. I was never a farrier. But no, when you're training paces, you do become very hands-on, and you learn to do everything yourself. It's not like thoroughbreds where you have farriers calling in every day and vets calling in every day and things like that. You really do learn to do everything yourself. And so as a teenager, I was just thought it was part of the deal. So I think it was a great experience for me, and I certainly did learn to do everything. I was breaking horses in. I knew how to put a shoe back on, and we had this great farrier also, and he taught me a lot about different angles of horses and all sorts of things in shoeing. So even though I wasn't actually doing that myself, I just knew the right way that horses should be shod and how important it was.
There's the old saying, no feet, no horse, isn't
there? Yeah, very true. That is so true.
Do you find it's more critical with pacers and trotters than gallopers? Because
it is
often
in certain ways. Yeah, in certain ways it is, because the pacers can hit their knee and they can crossfire and do all sorts of damage to themselves. Because they've got hobbles on and they've got to run a certain gait. So they can, cause themselves a lot of damage if they're not doing that correctly and smoothly. With racehorse, they're just doing that natural action of a gallop. But still, it's so important to, have them shod correctly and evenly and all sorts of things, because they can get corns, they can get sore heels, they can... You know, so many things can go wrong if they're not shod correctly. So it's very important in a different way.
Now, your harness racing driving career, was that something that started by accident or something you really wanted to do passionately?
No, it was always a plan. I was doing a few other things as well, but it was something I really loved doing. I loved driving and I loved riding. So, you know, I trained for a few years and drove quite a few winners. So I really enjoyed it.
Now, you had a lot of winners, doubles, triples, Harold Park there. I think at one stage you were the number one female driver and you represented New South Wales in the Australian Drivers' Competition.
Yeah, I did that. I think I got suspended in that race too, so that was a bit of a rough race, as I recall. But, no, I did all those sorts of things and it was, like I said, you know, it's part of your learning your trade and it teaches you to be better as you move on to different things later on in life, and that's what I wanted to do. I eventually wanted to train racehorses. So, you know, I think all that was a great platform for what I'm doing today.
I mentioned the name Renji Bill. What does that bring back memories of?
Yeah, she was a great, great mare. She was the best horse I ever drove. I drove some nice horses, but she was very small, but had a huge, huge heart, and she won a lot of races and a lot of races at Harold Park also. But she was only like 14 hands. She was tiny, and she was very narrow as well, but the cleanest pacer and a huge stride for a little mare. So I enjoyed driving her. She was it was most probably one of my biggest thrills, having the opportunity to drive her and drive a lot of winners on her.
Tell me about the day at Harold Park when I think there five of you came down and you were one of the last. You ran over a couple of blokes and then you shot through the air.
Yeah. I had that was most probably my worst fall, I think. One of the horses in front, in behind the leader, actually choked down and just brought half the field down. And, you know, you could see all this unfolding in front of you and there was nothing I could do. Like, you've got a horse and a gig and you just got to hang on and... I was the last one to go, and when I hit them, it just catapulted me up really high up into the air and came down. And I was okay. I didn't break anything, which was a miracle, but I was badly winded and badly bruised. I can assure you, I was pretty ran over a few drivers on the way. So
you would have had a bit of bark off after that.
Yeah, it wasn't a pretty sight, but... thankfully, that didn't happen too often. I only had just a handful of falls over the years, and I never broke anything. So I think I was pretty lucky.
Now, Kim, finally on your harness racing career, you did lurk out of retirement there one day. I think it might have been a Tuesday meeting, and got talked into having a drive, correct?
Yeah, I did. I hadn't driven for a few years, and there was the... Alan Shara, it was, had a couple of nice horses, and he said, come on, Kim, come back and just have a drive of these horses, you know. And I went and just jumped in, drove and worked one morning. I thought, okay. So I said, all right. And they gave me my license back, and I hadn't driven for about 5 years, I think. But, it was great fun, and it was really good because I drove a winner. So, and then I went back into retirement.
That was just the little cameo appearance and then racked the queue.
It was all fun. It was interesting.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting when I mentioned you said you got catapulted out of the sulky. A horse by the name of Catapult would have been, I imagine, one of your favourite horses, but probably be almost one of your most frustrating as well.
Yeah, he was a great horse, Catapult. You know, was most probably my first really good horse I'd had training. He won a Grafton Cup and won Premier's Cup. He won some really nice races. But he did have a lot of injuries. He didn't have the best front legs. And he done a suspensory two or three times and other little issues he had along the way. But he was a great horse. He raced until he was 8. And, you know, he won like 11 races. And half of them were listed all group races. So he was a great horse to me. And we had so much fun with him because he raced for... From a two-year-old, he won his very first start at Rose Hill, until an eight-year-old. So he was a big part of my life. And, Yeah, I really enjoyed training him, and he taught me a lot too, you know.
You had him basically since, I think from what I can gather, when he was almost a yearling or foal.
Yeah, yearling. Had him from a yearling. And then I gave him to a friend of mine when he retired, and she still has him. So, and she's retired him from riding now. So he's been retired twice, but he's still kicking along, and he's had a wonderful life.
Another horse that I reckon you'd have lovely memories of is a horse called Never True.
Yes, he was a great horse. Great for me, you know. Well, he was my very first good horse and one of my very first horses that I trained. And he won 10 races and won quite a few. He won the South Grafton Cup and quite a few races in town. And he was a nice horse. It wasn't a top liner, but he was very consistent, very gutsy, and always very competitive. Like winning 10 races is a good effort.
I'm chin wagging with Kim Waugh. Kim, when you made the transition from harness driver across to training racehorses, I imagine that must have been pretty difficult because you wouldn't have had an automatic team of horses to take over. The family background wasn't in gallops, and people had looked and thought, yeah, you go all right in a sulky, but this is a different caper. Was it hard?
It was slow. It was a slow process because it was something I just wanted to do, and I decided, oh, this is the time I'm going to do it. I didn't have any backing. I didn't have any, you know, big owners that said, oh, you know, do that and I'll give you eight horses or six horses or something. So the first couple of years, I only had a couple of horses in work and lease horses, and I got people to go in them and things like that. So it was a very slow process, but it was, you know, over the years it slowly built up, and like I said, Never True came along and was very helpful, and I got a few more horses there through that. And I think people realise, I mean, if you're a good horse person and you've got some idea of how to train, which I had trained and driven as in the trot, you know, I just was an automatic. It was easy for me to transition, but, you know, people sit back and see how you go first before they start to give you horses. Mm. So I didn't have the big famous name or a dad that was a trainer. So it made things a lot tougher. But, look, at the end of the day, I slowly got there, but that's what you've got to do and if you want to get somewhere.
Kim, are there many common principles or techniques from harness to gallops in training them?
Oh, no, it's very, very different. I think, you know, in the trotting world, I mean, looking after a horse and doing all that sort of stuff, and I had been involved in both sides growing up, you know, from a young age. So I could see the big difference. I used to ride work when I was a teenager, and you know, they used to do no work in comparison to the work that trotting horses did. Very different that way. Looking after them and the feeding and all that sort of thing is very similar. But, yeah, the workload, I would say, would be the biggest difference, you know, knowing, you know, one cops a lot of work over a long time and the other one gets short, sharp work.
Now, you rode work, I think, for Dave Campbell, did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because he was at Bankstown where I was. So that's who, you know, taught me a lot as a teenager. I was around his stable a lot, and he also had great show jumpers. So he taught me how to jump, you know, at a quite high jumps, and I used to love that. And he taught me a lot, you know, in that area. So it was all very interesting, and I enjoyed Dave. He loved his horses and he looked after them very, very well.
Now, chin wagging with Kim Waugh. Kim, the horse Martoum was your first Group 1 winner. It means keep the faith. And you just have beautiful memories of that horse.
Definitely do. My first Group 1 winner, but he was also a very good horse to me. You know, he was another horse that raced till he was 8 years old. And, you know, he won some great races and gave us all some big thrills, and he had a couple of little issues along the way, but you know, he was a stayer, and you know, he had a few big breaks. He, when he was a young horse, he was in Queensland for the Derby and the lead-up races there, and he injured himself in the box, and he got a stress fracture of the pelvis. So he had to have quite a long break. But, you know, he got over that and came back, and he raced on for years. So he was a great horse, and that's what we called our property after when we bought the property here, called it Martoom Lodge.
You were all set to head to Melbourne for the Cup, and he got a hoof injury.
He ran in the Cup, and he ran sixth. So that was a big thrill, you know, like just experiencing all that, you know, the lead up to it and, you know, being surrounded by so many amazing horses. That was the year that the Japanese horse won and ran second. And it was a huge run, and Corey Brown rode him, and he said, you know, he went fantastic. He got badly interfered with at the half a mile, and he said he should have run third for sure. But it's still a great run when he ran sixth.
And for six, you probably would have picked up around $100,000 or more for prize money.
Yeah, it was $100,000. So that was a good result. And I think, you know, 24 horses in a race, and you've got, you know, if you finish in the first six, I mean, it's pretty pleasing.
Now, Kim, true or false, Martoom won the Sydney Cup. I think it was either the day after or the week after you got married. The Sydney Cup appeared at your wedding.
Yep.
It was almost super glued to your hand for a period of time, I do believe.
Yeah, well, we won the Sydney Cup, and our wedding was the next weekend on the Sunday after. So, yeah, it was a really busy time, you know, an exciting time. Sydney Cup 1 week, getting married the next, like, you can't beat that. But, yeah, so we took the cup and everything to the wedding and celebrated that as well. So it was a great wedding.
I saw one report, you hardly slept for about 2 weeks from the excitement.
Exactly. Well, I was, you know, planning, you know, the Sydney Cup and lead up for that with Martoom, and then also, you know, the final plans for the wedding. So it was, like, for a couple of weeks, was just unbelievable. Just didn't sleep much at all. And then we went to Fiji for 10 days. And I think, you know, that's where it took its toll. I got there and I was exhausted, and I just slept. I slept 3 days.
Hit the brick wall.
Yeah, sure did.
Now, when you talk of holidays, it's a 7-day-a-week job as a racehorse trainer. And do you get a break at all? Is there a time frame where you can say, we can get away for a week?
Yeah, I think what you have to do to keep sane, because it is never-ending and very demanding these days. It's you know, races are on every day, and you've got to try and, you know, work at the staff, get a break and get their weekends off, and you've got to try and get some sort of a break as well. So the only way I have decided, when I'm having time off, it's never a perfect time. So we just pick a date where we think, well, this might fit in okay, and we book it and we do it, because otherwise, if over the years, if you sort of say, oh, let's do it in June, and that time comes, you think, oh, no, put it off. But at least if it's booked, it makes you do it. And you have to recharge and keep sane, you know, because it's hard work these days, yeah.
Now, you've had good success with some recycled racehorses, and, I mean, Godolphin cast-offs, ones like that, and I think Lloyd Williams horses as well.
Yeah, we have. You know, we had Forget, who was a Godolphin, and we only paid $60,000 for him at Tried Horse Sales, and he was, you know, we won a lot of races with him, and he won the Cameron Handicap, the Group 3, which was fabulous, you know, and really enjoyed. He was a lovely horse. And then, you know, more recently, we bought two off Lloyd Williams, and that he recommended. We thought it would be good for us, and actually one of them's in Saturday, our Century, and they've both, he won the Lord Mayor's Cup for me, last preparation, first prep for me, and the other horse, Ghostland, he won the Anzac Day Cup first start for me. So we've had great success with him, and we really appreciated getting them off Lloyd. It was great. You know, he said there was no issues with him, and there definitely wasn't, and they've gone on and been very handy in our team.
I'm chin wagging with Kim Waugh. Your husband, Mark, great cricketer, but also he's passionate about his racing. What sort of role does he play in the combination?
He loves his racing, always has. He, you know, his whole life, he's been involved in racing, trotting, and he loves having a bet and does his form, loves doing his form. You know, he's been a great help for me forever, doing the form and, you know, telling me, because, I mean, I haven't got time to be doing that sort of stuff. You know, I'm too busy. But, you know, and he gives me good advice on what he thinks the race will be, how it will be run, or if there's pace or if there's no pace or whatever, you know, different horses. So it's a really big help over the years. And he's got his own job, so he's not really hands-on with the horses. He loves the horses, but he's not a horsey person as such. But, no, he loves being around them, loves being around the farm and doing things. And I think he really enjoys that also.
It was funny, earlier this morning I spoke with Les Bridge, and he said, one day you're the rooster, the next day the feather duster. And I suppose that feeling must have been around with the provincial championship. When you're there, you get a couple of horses going well, then all of a sudden things can go a bit pear-shaped, can't they, in the blink of an eye?
Yeah. Well, it's just what we're dealing with. They're living animals and, you know, they're athletes, and things can go wrong. And we had Uptown Lad win the heat at Hawkesbury very, very impressively. And then he bowed a tendon. And then we had News Fan and Manhattan Mist. They were sort of a couple of the favourites in the race, and on the morning of the race, Manhattan Mist obviously got cast overnight, and he walked out on three legs and hurt his back leg, so he had to be scratched the morning of the race. So then we had News Fan left, who ran second, and was unlucky second. She just couldn't get out to the last 100 metres, but flew home. She went super, but yeah, so that's just racing, you know. You've got to take the ups and downs. You can't dwell on it too long because, you know, you've got to keep moving ahead and deal with what you've got and do the best you can.
How important is a thermometer in training these days?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, most trainers take temperatures. You definitely, you know, it's, you know, you can look at a horse and he looks fine, but take his temperature and it's another story. So I think it's just a part of training that you definitely need. You know, they're not humans. They can't say, I'm feeling sick today. So we've got to work on that ourselves and look at things and pick things up before it gets too bad, you know.
It must be a wonderful benefit having the property as well, to be able to tip horses out into a paddock for a couple of days just to mentally and physically freshen them up.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's one of the things since we've moved here that we've really, I've noticed it's been a big benefit for my training. You know, I spell all my own horses. They basically don't leave my site now. They all spell here at Martin Lodge. And then they go into pre-training here. We've got a treadmill and we've got an arena that they work on a couple of days a week. And when they're not in the arena, they're on the treadmill. And they do their few weeks groundwork here. And then they go into the track to step up and start getting ready to go back to the races. So it's just a really nice system. And it's just working really well for me.
Now, Kim, you got three in at Rose Hill Saturday, Our Century, Oxford Poet, News Fan, and won well the other day. Which is the pick of those?
Oh, look, they're all different. Oxford Poet's second up, and I think he loves the 1400. I think the 1400 really suits him and the pace in the race. He went great the other day. He was taken on and on a very hot pace, but he still ran fifth, went very well. So, you know, I think he's a good chance, good each way chance. He must really be good odds. Our Century's first up over 1900. He's had two trials, and I'm not sure what price he'll be. He'll be one of the favourites, I would imagine. But he's going very well. But whatever he does Saturday, I know he's still got improvement in him. But couldn't be happier with him. And News Fam, well, she won very well the other day. The 1300 will suit her. And she's got quite a bit of weight. So we've claimed with her. So that's most probably the only thing with her. She has got a bit of weight. I think if she handles that well, she's a great chance again. So they're all sort of each way chances. Mm. I've got a great opinion of News Fan, so I'm just hoping she can do what she did again last week on Saturday.
Well, our century's $9 fixed odds at the moment.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Now, I've left the most important one to last, Bully, the little donkey.
Yes, well, what would you like to know about him? He's still running the show.
Yeah, I've seen video of him walking through the house the whole lot.
Oh, yeah. No, he comes in to visit every now and then. Like, he used to come in when he was a little baby, you know, when I was making his milk up for him. So that's how that all started.
And, how did you get him?
The people next door, the guy next door had the donkey that she had Bully. And after a week, she just stopped feeding him. She wouldn't let him near her. Mm. She was really rejecting him and quite aggressive to him. And we saw him in the paddock on his own, like lying down. And I thought, gee, that's not good. So I went over and he looked very sick. We didn't really know at the time what was wrong with him, but we got him up and tried to get him to drink with her. And she just went to kick him and chased him away. And we realised what the problem was. And so we got the vet and took him home because the guy sort of was away at the time and he didn't really have time to look after him. So that's how I ended up with him. So we had to, like, feed him every few hours because he was only a week old and he was tiny. He was only 14 kilos. So, so that's how he ended up coming in the house quite a bit, you know. When I was busy and I'm making his milk up, I'd let him just come in while I did it. And so now he just thinks he can still do that.
Like having a child.
Yeah, well, he sort of is, you know. When you've had him since, a week old, it's a bit of a soft spot there.
And is he the only other animal apart from the four-legged varieties there? Because you are an animal lover.
Yeah, I've got lots of dogs and we've got two little girl donkeys as well. So I've had them for a few years, actually. So that's why I had the girl Bully, because he's just starting to get a bit too big for his boots. So I thought, I don't need any more donkeys.
You could have had more donkeys than the gallopers.
Yeah, I know. No, we've got enough donkeys. They entertain us enough.
That's good. Well, Kim, it's been fantastic having a chin wag with you this morning. And good luck over the weekend. News Fan, as you said, looks an exciting prospect, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. Lovely mare. And, we're just hoping she does what what she's showing us. You know, she looks like a pretty handy girl. So she hasn't let us down yet.
Well, terrific. Have a great Christmas and lots more winners
Thank
too.
You.
Thank you very much.
You too. Bye.